Kunstradio, Radiokunst.
Susanne Niedermayer wünscht Ihnen einen schönen Abend und begrüßt Sie zu einer weiteren Ausgabe des Kunstradios. Genau heute, vor einer Woche, feierte das Kunstradio den 1963 von Robert Filliou ausgerufenen Arts Birthday. Wie bereits im vergangenen Jahr, auch heuer wieder mit Künstlern und Künstlerinnen aus den verschiedensten Teilen der Welt, die sich on-site, on-air und online zusammenschlossen, um der Kunst ein Geschenk zu machen. Auf CITR-FM, der Radiostation der University of British Columbia in Vancouver, feierte man gleich ganze 24 Stunden. Mit Anbindung an das Internet, gegenseitiger Vernetzung der Webcams und gemeinsamen Jam-Sessions zu Ehren der Kunst, an denen auch wir uns beteiligten. Im Rahmen der allgemeinen Feierlichkeiten lebte dann in der Früh des 17. Jänner sogar die HB-Show wieder auf. Die HB-Show wurde 1976 als wöchentliche Radiokunstshow von Hank Bull und Patrick Reddy initiiert. Damals wurde der Grundstein für eine rege Radiokunstszene gelegt, die in der Zwischenzeit längst über die Grenzen Kanadas hinaus bekannt ist. Die nicht kommerzielle Radiolandschaft war in Kanada bereits in den 70er Jahren sehr differenziert und ausgeprägt. Insbesondere der Sektor der Community- und Universitätsradios. Wodurch auch viele Künstler und Künstlerinnen die Möglichkeit geboten wurde, das Medium Radio als ein Mittel zur Gestaltung kennenzulernen. Die Protagonisten rund um den Soundökologen Murray Schafer trafen sich etwa in der New Sounds Gallery, einer Sendung von GX Jupiter Larson, die einmal wöchentlich auf CFRO Co-op Radio gesendet wurde und die bereits Anfang der 80er Jahre internationale Radiokunst vorstellte. Unseren Nachforschungen zufolge dürfte New Sounds Gallery übrigens die weltweit erste aus der öffentlichen Kunstförderung finanzierte Radiokunstsendung gewesen sein. Auch nicht unwesentlich, denkt man daran, dass vor allem Kunstprojekte, die sich großer Prozessorientiertheit erfreuen, selten mit reichlichen Fördermitteln gesegnet werden. Seit 1988 gibt es nun auf CITR-FM die wöchentliche Radiokunstsendung Absolute Value of Noise. Diesmal ein Projekt von Peter Kortemensch. Jenen unter Ihnen, die das Kunstradio öfters hören, sicherlich ein Begriff. Und hier am Ende sind wir auch schon wieder am Anfang. Arts Birthday letzte Woche kann man mit Recht als die Geburtsstunde einer neuen Ära der Radiokunst in Vancouver bezeichnen. Denn im Rahmen von Arts Birthday sendete CITR-FM zum ersten Mal 24 Stunden lang Radiokunst. On-site, on-air und online. Ganz so, wie wir das auch gerne tun. Ausschlaggebend für diesen markanten Wendepunkt dürfte unter anderem Vancouver 2000 gewesen sein, eine Projektreihe des Kunstradios in Zusammenarbeit mit dem Verein Werks und der Western Front in Vancouver, die die Tradition der Telekommunikationskunst zwischen den beiden Städten aufgreift und weiterentwickelt. Und in diesem Sinne wollen wir Ihnen heute einige weitere Radiokünstler aus Kanada vorstellen. Zusammengestellt wurden die Arbeiten von der Künstlerin Anna Fritz, die ihrerseits auch bei CITR-FM als Allround-Genie arbeitet. Die Studioarbeit, die Sie seit einigen Minuten im Hintergrund hören können, stammt von Industry and Agriculture, Arco Joseph Montaigne und Brady Cranfield. Sie zählen zu der jüngsten Generation der an Soundökologie und Soundscapes interessierten Künstler. Die beiden sind DJs und legen auch als solche bei CITR-FM auf. Bei Arts Birthday haben sie live als Radiokünstler mitgewirkt. eine Studiearbeit von Agriculture and Industry, Acker Joseph Montaigne und Brady Cranfield, die immer wieder bei dem Universitätssender CITR-FM in Vancouver auflegen. Auch das nun schon über ein Vierteljahrhundert alte Co-op-Radio in Vancouver ist weiterhin der Radiokunst gegenüber sehr aufgeschlossen. Während die meisten Universitäts- und Community-Radios den Künstler und Künstlerinnen zwar Zugang zu den Sendemitteln, aber keine Produktionsmöglichkeiten bieten können, hat das Co-op-Radio in der Zwischenzeit die Möglichkeit, einen Artist in Residence bei sich aufzunehmen. Langfristige Radioprojekte können sich so entwickeln. Sontim Selike erhielt ebenfalls diese Gelegenheit. Sie kommt von der Literatur und hat sich in ihrer Radioarbeit, die Sita Conversations with My Mother's Sisters, auf die Geschichte ihrer eigenen Familie bezogen, die teilweise in Äthiopien und teilweise in Vancouver lebt. Die Sita bedeutet in Amharic Erinnerung. Das Wort wird aber auch als Bezeichnung für ein musikalisches und poetisches Genre verwendet, in dem Verlorenes besungen und beschrieben wird.
Very difficult to be fair on Ethiopian women. There is one thing about Ethiopian women, you know. They always had property rights. And their share of property is equal to that of men. Equal to their brothers and whatnot. How they used it, how they use this, because they can get married, and then it's more or less the husband who run the property for them and whatnot. Even some of them, few of them, he sells it, and this type of things did occur. From when I was little, until I grew up, I was thought that I'm going to be educated. Educated for what? I don't know. But that, do you call that freedom? For what? They by going to school and being educated, they didn't achieve this. Feeling that they have this freedom, they have to use it, they can do anything with their own life. I don't think they, even if they go to school and feel that bit of freedom, it would lead them to recognizing their oppression.
Somewhere during your transatlantic journey, caught between colonial indignation and romantic rhythm, a story was read to you, back and forth, back and forth.
My hair is grey, but not with years, nor grew it white in a single night, as men's have grown from sudden fears.
The poem, it's like the Lord's Prayer, despite yourself. When your palms are sweaty, you chant the same few lines. You can recall.
My limbs are bowed, but not with toil, but rusted with the vile repose.
You never remember the whole poem, the whole story. I grew up in a philosophical home. No matter what time of year it was, my mother sang to me the same song.
Shall all acquaintance be forgot?
The poem, You Never Remember Anything Past Verse 3, even though you are forced to read the whole thing over and over again. As a child, I would stop my mother at verse 5. From the top, I would say,
da 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 da. We were seven who now are one, six in youth and one in age.
My mother read these poems to me, sometimes in Toronto, sometimes in Guyana, sometimes in Barbados. We are from Ethiopia. There are seven sisters in my mother's family. In these foreign places, she is now one. Traveling on the SkyTrain from East Vancouver to downtown, this is when I find my palms sweating. I start to chant. I never remember the whole poem. I never get the whole story. But this is certainly part of it.
If you say, if you take my sisters, I'm the fourth, I think. So there are three before me. My eldest sister, you know, she was married. I can't remember very much from her first marriage, because I was too young, and then he died. And then later on, so she was really more or less, she did take care of us. My mother, we became refugees, we went to Jerusalem during the Italian War, Ethio-Italian War, and I remember her taking care of us. I mean, us buying our clothes, sending us to school. Both of them, both of my eldest sister Martha and my eldest, so that's how I see them. Little juggle of the houses, whenever we were boarder anyway in school, whenever we came home, there they were. I remember buying clothes for us and whatnot, asking us to do certain things, teaching us doing, you know, the things, household things, things like that. I don't know how much influence that had in me, because I was never. I had never become up to a household, you know, taking care of the house and things like that. My elder sister, I think she must have had quite a lot of influence on, because I lived most lot a long time with her. She looked after father and mother and all the grandchildren and children, sisters as well. She managed the house. I don't know. I don't say I felt very motherly to, you know, like a mother to me, because my mother was there also. But as a sister, she was sort of semi-motherly thing to everybody else's. Because mother had her own praying to do and cooking to do. Now, Martha, she was with her husband. We went to visit her. She was also acting as a sort of family person. Now, for instance, neither of the two, like, for instance, T.J. managing house, influenced me to be something like that, or Martha's life to get married and have children. Mm-hmm. I used to admire Ruth very much, because she was so sort of selfless. She did exactly what she wanted, you know. She used to teach at the university, and then she decided to to go and work in, she thought it's better to go and work in the provinces than work here. Certain, I still have an admirer. I like her ideas. In fact, I have a feeling that maybe I've grown up to be like that, similar to her. You know, we won't accept anything till we really go through it in our heads and analyze. Not because she's my sister, but the way they all that's biased, maybe biased about my own sister. But all of them, you know, if they, what I call strength, is that they, if we believed in something, we continued with that. That runs in everybody, stronger in some than others. But maybe if we had gotten married and had some other life or experienced some other things, we may have changed a bit. But since we continued, all of us here, the four of us, we just... Judith and Ruth are very different from Martha and Tige. We, the younger ones, were more beneficial of this type of family because we had different... The way Tige thought, the way Martha thought. We got things a bit of all of them, I think.
Of course, as I already hinted, the social group in which I grew up and developed wanted us women to be married and get settled. But I remained single and working. This is very unusual. However, it was a kind of a either-or in those time. I think circumstances might have favored my remaining single. I always wanted to be independent, and which means really not depending on others for livelihood. I wanted to get education, work, and also support myself. And whenever I'm able to do it, it's help others. So this is the picture of myself. Not very complicated. But it is, you know, I don't know. The war, the Italo-Ethiopian war, probably has to do something with it, because during that war, we seized children, us children, we seized to be acting like girls in an Ethiopian society. For example, there was mother with seven of us. My eldest was not there, with seven of us children who migrated, who became refugees, 6 months in Aden, 6 months in Djibouti. Then we were left alone with mother. But whatever activity there was in the house, we were there to help. For example, Mamie was only 6 months old, and I remember looking after her. We lived with other families, with other Ethiopian families in the same house. So you see that there is a kind of an abrupt separation from the old way of living in Ethiopia, and a new way starting. There's quite a difference between the two. After 6 months here and there, after a year, we heard that father was imprisoned, and we migrated to Jerusalem, And there we were put immediately to schools, to a convent. And there we started a new life. It was this. For example, this was before the Italian War. My aunt, father's sister, got married. Must have been quite small there. And we children were to surround her. Well, this is an affair, a whole month's affair. And she was the bride. But we were also a kind of a semi-bride, you know, surrounding her, singing with her, playing with her. So this way of life has really changed when we went to Jerusalem. And if we had stayed in Ethiopia, Martha would have married next, you know, she wasn't married. And probably I would have followed the steps. I don't know.
It's rather difficult, you know. I have a theory that women in general, speaking of women, they seem always to get what they want. It's the method that they use. They get what they want by submission, by pretension, by trying to pretend that they are weak. Depending on the society. The society asks them to do certain, but they always get what they want, either or by forceful, by revolt or things like that. So, I don't think I'm any different than any of the other, than any of the other women. It's just the method that one uses. I remember once they were telling me that they had contact with the guerrilla fighters, and evidently they told them that they don't have any more ammunition. So the women collected, I don't know from where, ammunition. And they didn't know how to take care of it, you see, because there were all sorts of inspections, suspicion. The Italians wanted to, you know. So they put it in a burial box, the ammunition. And they started crying. And they were taking this, the burial things, to the burial places in order to bury. And that was one way of passing the ammunition to the other side, this type of things.
There's a girl
At the far left, this girl, she was forced into marriage with a very elderly person during the Italian War, I think. She's not very old. And I think he forced her into something sexual. It was an arranged marriage, but she refused. But the husband, he was a sort of warrior, a shifter, what they call shifter. And he snatches her, takes them, and I think she takes them, and I think she had a bad sexual experience. Somehow she gets away from him. And maybe it's during this changes with Italian's war. And she gets educated, and she joins the commercial school. She was one of the very, very first students at the commercial school, and she becomes a very good typist, a really good typist. And I think she was the very first woman who owned a car at Cipollino, was driving around in town. The fact that she ran away and got them, it made her more independent. And she's left independent.
You know, in Ethiopia, when they go to war, the woman goes with them. But, of course, there are those who are recognized, like Taitu, who were recognized as a figure, Ethiopian figure, like Yodit is not popular. You know that she's not popular. Well, she ruled for 40 years. She destroyed, she was Jewish. She destroyed churches like that. And she was rather assertive, I think, from what I hear, from what I learn. Mm. But my name, Yodit, does not come from her. I asked my father once, I told him, why did you call me, why did you give me that name? And he said that I chose that name. Someone said, I don't know, someone, when I was playing, said, oh, this girl should be named Yodi. But the day of my birth and the name Yodi didn't correspond. So father was telling me, he said, you know, which name would you like to have, this or that? Mm. So I asked him, what did Yodi do? Mm. And he told me, and the other one, the day I was born, this was a woman who was sacrificed, who was crucified for her faith. So I said, Father, I rather be your rich. So that's how he said, that's how I got the name. My namesake, Yodit, she killed. She was beautiful. And then the other tribe, I can't remember now, the other tribe got hold, and she was sort of a prisoner. She was leading the Jews. And since she was beautiful, he was flirting with her, and then he wanted to have an affair with her. She made him drunk, she cut his head, and then the next day she presented the head to her tribe. That's what I understood of her deeds.
Some other companionship. So my every life, it was fun. Companionship.
I keep on going back there, but I never stay. I say to my mother's sisters, I want to live with women. Someone said, listen to them. They are four women living together, raising two children.
Probably I would have sought some other companionship if they were not. My sisters were not there. But my sisters being close to me, and I'm sure I didn't need any other companion. I never thought of adopting children. I couldn't bear the responsibility. It was the decision of Judith to adopt. Because it does make a difference, to have a child in the house, to have a child growing up in the house, which is good.
If I look back at it, I think it was a beautiful association that we really had. And we enjoy each other's company, we work. We have our independent work that we do. And then we cooperate and we live together comfortably and happily. I think it's very good. I like it. And it was fun.
So my early life was really surrounded by women. And now, if we take it in stages, and now I think I occasionally relate to very highly spirited women and intelligent women who are housewife. Mm-hmm. But I found that they're very bright, intelligent, and highly spirited. Of course, on and off you find comments which says, why are you not married?
Tisita, Conversations with My Mother's Sisters von Sontim Selike. Tisita bedeutet in Amharic Erinnerung. Das Wort wird aber auch als Bezeichnung für ein musikalisches und poetisches Genre verwendet, in dem Verlorenes besungen wird. Und dieses kleine, feine Radiostück heißt Stereotyped Latter-day Opinion und stammt von Jean Routier. Der aus Montreal stammende Jean Routier gehört zu einem Künstlertypus, der aus der kanadischen Medienkunstszene mit ihren vielen selbstverwalteten Produktionsstätten nicht mehr wegzudenken ist. Dem Künstlertechniker oder Techniker-Künstler, der als Spezialist anderen Künstlern, die technisch nicht so versiert sind, die Realisierung ihrer Projekte ermöglicht. Zurzeit ist Jean Routier Techniker bei der Western Front in Vancouver. In seiner eigenen künstlerischen Arbeit knüpft er an die ungewöhnlich vielfältige Tradition der kanadischen Elektroakustik in Montreal an. In Montreal unterscheidet man ganz präzise zwischen Radiokunst und musikalischen Formen für Konzerte, Tonträger und den öffentlichen Raum.
Thank you.
Ein anderer Künstlertechniker ist Robert Kosinak, der wie Jean Rottier zunächst als Techniker und später dann als Leiter der Medienkunstabteilung des Kunstzentrums Western Front jahrelang andere Künstler mit seinem kuratoriellen Know-how bei der Realisierung ihrer Projekte unterstützte und sie auch heute noch unterstützt. In seiner eigenen künstlerischen Arbeit experimentiert Kosinak mit Low Technology, selbst gebastelte Gerätschaften, teilweise aus gefundenem, teilweise aus gekauften. Kein Wunder also, dass er sofort Feuer fing, als Tetsuo Kogawa aus Tokio bei einem kanadischen Radiokunstsymposium vorführte, wie man selbst kleine Radiosender bauen kann. Mittlerweile hält Robert Kosinak selbst Workshops über Low-Power Radio ab. In dieser Sendung stellt er sich allerdings nicht als Vertreter der Mini-FM-Bewegung dar, sondern als ein feinfühliger Belauscher der Natur. Hören Sie nun eine Arbeit, für die Robert Kosinak einen ganzen November lang auf den mit Regenwald bewachsenen Salt Spring Islands an der kanadischen Pazifikküste verbracht hat. Salt Spring, Rain, Rain, Rain von Robert Kosinak.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They look like the winter
keepers. I've grown winter keepers before. These are really great. I'll always grow these ones. They, no matter how big they get, they still stay tender and they still get sweeter.
Are they?
Do you live on the island?
No.
Where do you live?
Barnaroo.
You have a garden?
A little one.
Amazing what you can do even in a little garden. Do you know about permaculture?
Is that garden?
Mollison? It's a kind of way of gardening. He says even on a little tiny balcony, you can grow a third of the food you need for your family.
Yeah. sorts of jams and jellies and chutneys to put on it. And then Nude, I don't know if you know Nude, she was here earlier, and she does Nude's Thai sauce. That's your sauce. I can't open those. Yeah, try some. Just put some on these. Those are samples of Du Bois. There's garlic chutney.
Those are real good beef.
This is mandarin oranges. I just did that yesterday. Lemon marmalade. That's a hot mustard.
A hot one? Yeah. Okay. A little bit.
How are you, hon? Where's your hat?
Being wet.
Yeah, get it under. Good weather for ducks.
Yeah.
How much of a turnout today?
Wasn't bad. How come you weren't here?
I'm getting lazy in my old age.
I think you are. Coffee?
No. Yes, please.
Cream and chicken? And I'll show you some pictures.
Scotch broom flowers.
Das war Salt Spring, Rain, Rain, Rain von Robert Kosinac. Die Radiokunstszene in Vancouver besteht aus mehreren Generationen und ist seit jeher eine äußerst lebendige. Was einmal in liebevoller Pflege gewachsen ist, sich selbstsicher verzweigt und ausgebreitet hat, das ist eben nicht so schnell unterzukriegen und in diesem Fall ist es auch gut so. Auch im Kunstradio werden Sie sicher wieder von Radiokünstlern aus Vancouver hören. Oder Sie informieren sich über diverse Querverbindungen auf unserer Homepage. Die Adresse lautet
http://thing.at/ORF Kunstradio.
Ich verabschiede mich aber für heute. Susanne Niedermeyer wünscht Ihnen im Namen des Kunstradio-Teams noch eine schöne Nacht.